thought I should tell you the reason why I chose this series, which I did get to do. And that is because identity is probably my biggest problem in life, and I think it might be one of the biggest problems of our generation, too. Thanks, Mike.
Wow. 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 Great. Thank you.
Yay, Mike Stichter. I think identity is a really confusing thing for us, and the self is a really confusing thing because we live in a very self-referential culture. Like, you'd think we know ourselves really well because of our Facebook presence, you know, how I can craft exactly what pictures of there to put up of myself and not. So that's like a lot of self-work. And at the same time, it's not necessarily true that Facebook is helping us take care of ourselves better or love each other better. So that's why I think self is just a very confusing issue, and especially related to the Christian life and Christian aims like self-denial and love. I think the self can be very confusing. So that's one reason why I wanted to talk about true self, false self for this summer, and it's because true self, false self, it changed the way that I related with God and related with the Bible, particularly Jesus' words in the Gospels and Paul's letters to the churches in the New Testament. My dad was a pastor, and I grew up in Sunday school and in youth group, and I emerged from them with something that you might feel familiar with, kind of this dualistic message of the New Testament where there's basically good and bad. Bad on one side and good on the other side. So things on the bad side, for example, that I learned were words like sin and the phrase being of the world and what else do I have? Oh, flesh and world itself and old self. Those were all things in the bad category to me. And the good category had words like love and self-denial and being in the world and denying self. And that might be helpful. I don't know another way. My parents are wonderful, so I don't know another way I could have grown up learning about this. But now I feel like a better category is true self, false self, which is still dualistic. It still is about two competing selves, but it is more spacious to me and more helpful when relating to God and reading the Bible. And that might be because of postmodernism, that I just kind of have like suspicion over good and bad. But if that's the case, that's just the way it is for me. So I hear now the Bible as talking about how to become more true and less false, rather than necessarily more good and less bad. And I saw, when I got this language, I saw Jesus and Paul talking about the good news being that our true identity is found in God and defined by God and not by others and not by ourselves. And that was very good news to me. If my identity was defined by me, it would be flimsy and indulgent and needy, and it would change as often as my appetites change. Saint Teresa of Avila is known for like being real profound mystic woman who talks about her inner life as like an interior castle. So she talks on and on about this, and then she says, oh yeah, and by the way, like most days I could be bought off for a sardine. And that's the way I feel. My appetites most days dictate who I'm going to be and how I treat you and how I treat others. When I'm hungry, I'm also angry. And so a friend came up with the term hangry to describe what I feel like. So even today, Steve and I asked him what was wrong because he was so happy in the morning and then he wasn't in the afternoon. I said, well, what's wrong? He said, oh, I'm just hangry. Oh, okay. I totally understand that. If I'm hungry and angry, that will dictate my day. So if my identity was defined by me, that would be one of my main things. I would also just want to be comfortable. That's one of my other main things, like not too hot and not too cold. I'd want to like try to live as if I was 26 for the rest of my life, because I think that's when I peaked physically. And I told Stephen that I think it's all downhill from there. So I would try to just like keep that, which some people are trying to do that. And if my identity was defined by others, I would definitely be frantic and people-pleasing and flaky and basically at the mercy of the most judgmental person in the room with the most power. But living from the center of my being, where my identity is defined by God and not by others, that sounded so freeing to me, that idea of true self being your identity defined by God. And Henry Nouwen talked a lot about that freedom that comes from the true self and said, I am convinced that I will truly be able to love the world when I fully believe that I am loved far beyond its boundaries. And the people I most look up to in the world, you know, when someone does something that you're just so impressed by, like they respond to grief or they respond to a hard situation with just like this security that amazes you, I feel like what I like about them is that they're able to live out of this radical security, that as if they're loved beyond the boundaries of the world. And they're able to love even after they've been hurt, and they're able to hope even after they've already been disappointed, and they're able to give even after they're lost. Those are people that when I see or hear about them in a movie or in a sports team or among us, that I think something about them I want to be like. So those are the main reasons why I wanted to talk about true self, false self for the summer. And one last reason has to do with the false self, and it's that there is this huge shadow side to religion, as probably all of us know in this room. Things done in the name of God have been some of the most horrific things done in history, and might be some of the most horrific things you've even done in your own story. And so one of the dangerous parts about trying to relate with God and be spiritual is that you might do things in the name of God, and they might not be godlike at all. And the problem is you might think that they actually are. I know that's been the case with me before. So there's this dangerous amount of freedom we're given in being spiritual and trying to conform to the image of Christ. And it seems like as we do grow into that image of Christ, our shadow self grows as well. And I feel like it's the responsibility of Christians to admit that and to have a language for that, which I use as the false self, that will always be there right behind my true self and sometimes in front of it. And it gives me a language for that and a reason to keep not believing that the longer I'm a Christian, for example, the less like ugly realities there are about me to face. So the true self, false self helps me keep doing that, helps me pray things like, you know, search my heart and see what false ways there are in me and lead me in an everlasting way, instead of believing that my false self is diminishing or something. So I'll just start by telling you the story of when this all came to life for me. It was in 2002, and that's after it's the beginning of my third year in college. So I go to college in Vancouver, Canada, and do this production, this year-long production, and Stephen and I are cast as the main characters. That's how we met, was auditioning for this piece that we like practiced for 8 months and then performed for 2 weeks in Vancouver. So I'm like in love with him the whole time, don't think he's gonna talk to me, go home for the summer to California. He does write me, and we fall in love, and we date for the whole next year. And then by the end of that second year, he still doesn't think he wants to ever get married. And I think, oh, I don't want to get hurt, so let's break up. So we break up. So what happens is after that summer, I go back to Vancouver to start my third year of college. We decide to see each other just to check in and, you know, kind of have closure a little bit. So we hang out, and during this time, he tells me that he has been seeing a girl off and on that summer. It just totally breaks my heart, even though that wasn't, like, out of the bounds of where we were at or anything. And I just remember that night feeling so torn, because I loved him so much, and I grew up thinking, love one another. And I loved him so much, but something just didn't feel right or healthy about like being in a relationship with someone that didn't want to be with you, which makes a lot of sense now. But so I'm like crying, and I'm very emotional and insecure in general at 21, and I have this kind of dream. And it's not a vision, but it is like a scene that plays out in my head. And it's that there's this little girl, and she's in bed, and she's sick, and she's coughing, and she's sweating, and kind of whimpering. And I just like walk past the room, and I think, wait, someone's taking care of her, right? And I just walk back in, and I realize that no one is in there, and I like look around like, oh my gosh, who like left her? Someone needs to take care of her. And then I realized that that little girl was me. She looked like me or something. And it totally revolutionized my idea of the self. Right away, I started thinking, wait, I'm supposed to take care of this little girl. That would be the good thing to do. This whole time, I'm thinking about how to love Stephen, and maybe what I'm supposed to love is right in front of me. So right away, I went to the greatest commandments in the Bible that I had grown up hearing about and saw it in a whole new light. So this is where the greatest commandments are in Matthew. So a Pharisee tries to trap Jesus, and he asks Jesus this question. Teacher, which is the most important commandment in the law of Moses? Jesus replied, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments. So I grew up with these verses, as I said, but it was the first time at this kind of dream realization thing I was having that I realized how many yous and yours were in these commandments, and how you have to have a self to love God with, and you have to have a mind to love God with, and you have to have a heart, and you have to have, is it strength? And you have to have a soul to love God with. You have to have some sense of those. And in a class last year that I had, a teacher, his mantra, which seems too wordy, but it's fine. His mantra was, self-identification is the prerequisite for self-utilization. I mean, you have to have a self to use it, is the other way to say it. You have to, if you want to bless someone with your presence, you have to have a self to do that with. So it sounds totally simple, but it completely changed the way that I saw God, and especially that second commandment about loving your neighbor as yourself. For the first time I heard it, that love your neighbor as yourself assumes that you love yourself well. So all this time I was trying to figure out how to love Stephen, and what I needed to do was love myself well, and then I'd be able to love Stephen well too. So I heard that verse also as a curse, in that you will love your neighbor as you love yourself. If you love yourself sporadically, and if you love yourself indulgently, you will love your neighbor like that. And I thought, well, no, that's probably not true. But then I thought, Jesus would never have said, so you know, Vanessa, you know how you don't like to rock the boat, and you think that if you do, people won't like you, or they won't do what you want them to do. Love the 13-year-old girls on your block just like that. I mean, he would never say that. Or, you know how you think buying a new outfit will make you more lovable and less lonely. Teach the 13-year-old girls on your block just that with your love. I mean, Jesus, sarcasm is not as fun as people make it sound. I didn't really like those two. They were so sarcastic. Jesus would never say that. I heard him as saying, you know that one thing you were entrusted with, that self of yours, you know how you cherish and you respect that as a gift from God, how it's the home for the Spirit. Love your neighbor with that same kind of love. And I had wished someone told me that. Because all of a sudden I was like, well, I don't know. Well, who am I then? Like, where do I start? What is my identity? What is myself? And this is being a little bit, I don't know the word, facetious, but whenever you have a question like, where do I start? Jesus seems to always be the multiple choice answer that you should pick. But that does seem to be true. I mean, in the Bible, it keeps saying, you'll have a hard time. Things are hard to figure out. God's hard to know. Learn from Jesus, or go to Jesus. You'll understand me by knowing Jesus. Anyone who accepts me will come to accept God. So Jesus is my guide in this. I would not know where to start other than this. So I looked at how does Jesus know himself, or who he is? So this is Jesus's like identification moment, when it's kind of his rite of passage, when he finds out who he is, and he might already know this. So Jesus comes, maybe he's 30 here, or maybe he's 33, I'm not sure. He comes to be baptized by John, the baptizer. And as soon as he comes up from the water, the heavens open up to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and coming to rest on him. And behold, a voice from heaven said, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased." So Jesus' identity came from this. And it's from that self that Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. It's from a self that has been called the beloved and has been set, and God the Father has said, I am well pleased in this self. So I have come to believe that that's where we all get to put our names into as well, that we are called the beloved just like Jesus is. There are a lot of passages in Scripture about us after Jesus ascends becoming brother and sister with Jesus. And Jesus says, now we're part of the same family. My God's your God. I talked on it a few weeks ago. My God's your God. My Father's your Father. And so if Jesus is called this by God, then we get to be the beloved daughter or beloved son of God too. But sometimes still that's hard to apply to myself. Like I said, with like our Facebook culture and everything, I'm still confused. Like, oh, so everything I do is fine, or I don't know how to work with that. And definitely at 21 years old at this time, I did not know how to work with that. But I could apply this idea to that mini me version that I saw. And that's what was so helpful for me, seeing myself as another or seeing myself as a child, because I could say, okay, I'm confused about me and like my motivations, but surely this child is a beloved. Like, no one's going to argue with that. Surely this child is a beloved. Surely this child deserves to be taken care of and loved and taken care of by somebody. I'm entrusted with her. Her name happens to be Vanessa. So I can do that. And I still sometimes do think of myself as another or as a child when I get confused about my motives. And sometimes I think of other people as their inner child as well. If you can do that without being patronizing, if you know someone really well and it's easy for you to write off something they're doing because you're like, oh my gosh, you're just doing this again. If you see them as like what they're really trying to say or like what their inner child is saying, it can help you know how to love them. And this idea of the self as an inner child or as another is a really familiar idea in psychology and spirituality. For one, we're called children of God a lot of times in the Bible. And that inner child part of us, I've heard described as that part of us that has always said yes to God. That there's a part in all of us that always said yes to God. And it gets buried, and we have defenses for it because we all get hurt, but that it's still intact. And maybe there are times that you've been in the presence of someone that you feel safe with, or in the presence of God, where you kind of feel that way again, where you're really present and you're not self-conscious and you're in touch with your anger or with your desire or both, just like children can be. So I wanted to end by just throwing out a few ideas of what that might look like, loving ourselves and our inner child, but I was hoping you guys could help as well. So be thinking of any ways you've already known how to do this in your life. One of my favorite authors is Gerald May, and he said that he doesn't think anyone has ever loved themselves enough, which echoes C.S. Lewis. If you heard that famous quote about how we're far too easily pleased, something about how we go on making like mud pies in the slums when feasts are available to us. So Gerald May kind of says the same thing. He says, I've never met someone who's not able to love, and I've also never met someone who loves themselves sufficiently. Of course, we're all selfish. Like, there's no question about that. But a lot of times, our selfishness is actually not self-serving in a positive way. It's self-defeating. So a lot of times, our self-love is not even doing what we mean it to do. It can be defeating. And this idea that no one has ever loved themselves sufficiently is in line with Bernard of Clairvaux. He has these four stages of the self, which things like this, stages and true self and false self, really never mean to cover the whole gamut of human experience or say that this is the way it is for everybody, like personality tests or something. You know, they're a tool, but this is by no means exhaustive. So he says there's these four stages. And the last stage that he said is hardest to do is love of self for God's sake. We probably, if we don't think about it too much, think, oh, we already do that too much. You know, we need to start denying ourselves more or something like that. But true love of self for God's sake could take us, probably will take us a lifetime. So I thought of just a few things that definitely are a part of my journey of self-care and self-love, but they also aren't always true in all situations. One is honesty and being honest before God. Like, if you're not going to be honest before God, I have trouble being honest, but if I'm not going to be honest before God, like, what am I doing? That's where you start. And that person that I like so much, Gerald May, said this about honesty, that honesty before God requires the most fundamental risk of faith we can take. The risk that God is good, that God does love us unconditionally, that we're called the beloved. You have to risk that, because everything in your mind will say, no, you're not. It's in taking this risk that we discover our dignity. To bring the truth of ourselves just as we are to God, just as God is the most dignified thing we can do in this life. So honesty, for sure, is like one of the avenues. Like, you should have honesty while you're doing self-love. The flip side of that is that sometimes honesty is not the most loving thing in the world. So I tried that for a while, just like be honest. But it definitely does not honor people or yourself sometimes to be honest in every situation. It's not the most loving thing necessarily to tell someone how annoyed you are with them. And a friend here who wrote some tips about technology, who's really good at technology, one of them says, you know when people take a break from technology, which is, it could be part of self-love for sure, or self-care, to take a break from technology. He, in his little tip thing, he says, just be polite about it. Or as Luke White would say, don't be a dork about it. You know, give like that auto message thing. He would say it more poignantly than I would. Just don't be mean about it. You know, sometimes in our honesty, like, let's say we are too immersed in Facebook, and so we go off technology. It can feel like we're giving the finger to our friends or people, when really we need to take ownership of like the area that we're having problems with. So like, own our own things. And so the suggestion was to do one of those auto reply messages that says, you know, I'm taking a little break. Totally call me, or something like that, instead of just leaving the world. So that's a good example of where, to me, when honesty can sometimes be mean and not helpful in the end. The next aspect of self-love is vulnerability. And vulnerability literally means to be capable of being wounded. So no wonder we don't like to do it. But it is, to me, one of those childlike qualities that those people that I respect so much seem to have. They are capable of being wounded the way that they live, and they can still live like that. But at the same time, this is where it gets tricky. It's not true for everyone in all situations that you need to be vulnerable, because I've definitely gone the path of like bearing all, kind of in that honesty way, when I've looked back and thought, I didn't need to share my whole process about that with this person. Something about being a true self with my identity defined by God means that I can have some dignity and privacy and secrecy to a certain extent around me. And discovering that, how to do that well, is fun, and that's fine. But always confessing, for example, as a way of being vulnerable might not be helpful. One example of this in the scriptures to me that I've had to use several times is after David has an affair with Bathsheba. It's in Psalm 51 when he's mourning this, and he has admitted it to the people around him. Nathan called him out on it, so it's not like he's hiding it from anybody. But in this psalm to God, he says, against you and only you have I sinned. And I've always was like, how can he get away with that? I'd love to say that. I'd love to just, every time I sin, just be like, God, I totally sinned, but no one has to know. It's just between me and you. Against you and only you have I sinned. But there have been times when I've wanted to confess to somebody, and I think the more vulnerable, more honest, more loving thing to do would actually be to confess this to God, and maybe someone else who wouldn't get hurt by it, wouldn't get hurt by that vulnerability. Let's stop there. So, are there any ideas about self